Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hey, good day. It's the Apparatus Architects with Mike Wilbur and Tom Shand. Once again, we're real happy to be back on the radio on a regular basis, on a monthly basis, and with the upcoming with the show season really now kind of in full swing. We're hopefully by this time here in June, where no matter where you are, you're into some decent warm weather. Certainly during the time that we Mike and I were exiled to some unfortunately, it wasn't a Hawaiian island. I'm not even sure that we were exiled within the United States territories, but everyone here coast to coast experienced a pretty rough winter. While a couple of years ago, I moved down from upstate New York down to the northwestern part of Virginia up in the Shenandoah Mountains. Even down here, they got 55 or 56 inches of snow, which some folks had claimed that's the greatest amount of snow they'd had in the last 10 years. So it's been a bit of tough winter, but we're happy to be here. So here's what we're going to cover in this segment. We're going to talk a little bit about each one, but Mike and I came up with this this list, and that's not to say that these are the only ones, but we thought about, let's talk about the top five mistakes that you can make when specifying a new rig. And there's probably, you could throw 15 or 20 things up there. These are just ones that Mike and I frequently see, and not to say that hopefully you're not making any of these, but if you even make one or two of what we consider to be the like the top five sins, it can really hamper the process of what you're doing. So, Mike, I know you've got to really think about, for our listeners that haven't been with us for a long time, Mike and I, we started writing the Apparatus Architect articles back well over 10 years ago. I don't even think we keep track of the number of articles, but we're up around somewhere close to 70 that we've written over the years. And going way back to the start, we talked about just initiating the process of you're thinking about buying a fire truck, how do you go about doing it? Looking at the generations of the fire service, to me, it's always somewhat humbling to go into a department and see where the different generations are represented either within the leadership of the organization or when Mike and I get invited to sit down and talk to an apparatus committee. They see us two codgers coming in with all gray hair, and we're sitting across the table from, in some cases, no disrespect, but the younger generation. I've got three boys that are older than the people we're dealing with. There's sometimes that little just logical and to be expected generation gap with folks that maybe haven't purchased a fire truck, maybe haven't even purchased a car, and never went down a road and bought a house or tried to build a house. So this is the first, you know, several hundred thousand dollar, in some case, $1 million project that they're working on, and they're going to cut their teeth on it. So, Mike, that being said, I know number one is near and dear to your heart, and that's why we put it at the top of the list. Of the top five mistakes you go out and teach and do your apparatus purchasing class, what's the first thing you're going to talk about to somebody as they start the process?
Define the mission of the vehicle.
Well, the mission is going to be, Mike, we're going to put out a fire. I mean, okay, next subject. Come on. How hard is that?
It's got to be better than that, Tom, because as we get, as we talked about last month, we start getting these multi-purpose vehicles, and we have an overwhelming number of people on a truck committee, and everybody wants the truck to be something different. And so we're now speccing out a pumper, tanker, foam, light, air, aerial, scuba, brush, helicopter landing pad, fire truck. And believe me, it may sound ridiculous, but if you had the money to buy it, there would be some manufacturer out there that would try to take your money and try to build it. The reality is that what do you need the truck to do, and you get one shot? What is the most important truck thing that this truck needs to accomplish? And in a recent aerial assessment that we went out and did, the department was having talked to the members after, because I'd try not to talk to them first and get an opinion. I try to form my own going in based on the facts, and this group thought that they probably needed a mid-mounted tower Quint. What they're going to end up purchasing probably is a rear-mounted aerial with no pump and no tank and about 230 to 260 feet of ground ladders. What we found in their first do is that they not only protect a large portion of the city, but they also protect some suburban rural type area. And what we're finding in rural type suburban areas are 10, 12. In this case, there was a 16,000 square foot private dwelling. It was built in a meadow. And although this was in Missouri, it's fairly flat in a lot of places in that state, there are rolling hills and rolling meadows. And when you look at these McMansions, they fall off in the back so that if you're engaged in active interior structural firefighting and you get cut off from the interior stairs and go to the back windows, you are looking at a 30 to 40 foot fall. So for a department not to have a couple of 35-foot ladders on their ladder truck would probably be an error in judgment. And then the next thing that they had to deal with is the road system. They only had two roads, major roads that went north and south, and two major roads that went east to west and west to east. And the rest of the roads were poor, to say the least. And then these McMansion developments, there were three of them, were actually privately built, and the roads were never brought up to county specifications, which in turn the county never took over, and so the roads are now being maintained by the development owner and or the owners of the homes in the development. To say that they were barely passable would probably be an understatement. And the idea of taking an 84,000-pound mid-mounted aerial tower with a pump and a tank on any of these roads, it probably would have just sank out of sight versus a 60 to 70,000-pound rear-mounted aerial without a pump and a tank, without the extra weight, and filled up with portable ladders so that they can properly ladder some of these larger homes. And I always toyed around with the idea, Brother Tom, of writing an article, and we don't do much with fires. Our whole emphasis is certainly on apparatus, but and maybe somebody else should write it, but that has more street cred. But just the idea of taking one of these large houses and write that it's just not a house fire anymore, and we need to take a much different approach. When you look at some of these quote-unquote private homes that are over 10,000 square feet, they actually have a greater fire load in them than the local strip mall. And they're not the same house fires, certainly, that you and I were used to growing up in the fire service in the 70s and 80s with, you know, basically Class A wooden paper, wooden furnishings, and natural items, and not the synthetics and the plastics that we have today with the double hung windows, but more importantly, just the square footage. I mean, a big house back in our day was, if you had a 3,000 square foot or 4,000 square foot house, that was a huge, huge house. And now that's just not the case. Much different fires, much different properties, and it requires a much different approach when you go out and specify and purchase apparatus. So you really need to look long and hard in your first do and determine what that actual, what is the major thing that this vehicle needs to do? What is that? What is the ultimate mission of this vehicle? What does it need to do best first? And then you can design the rest of the vehicle around that. And if you don't have the expertise to determine that yourself, then maybe you need to hire somebody in that can do that for you. But before you go out and spend $1 million on a ladder truck, it's my advice that you should probably get some expertise and help. That's what the folks in Nixon, Missouri did, and I think that they were really pleased with the outcome because what they were thinking of getting and what they actually are going to need were two totally different things.
Yep, Mike, I agree, and along with that, the mission of the vehicle is that particularly if you are replacing a unit, is, you know, what equipment is this going to carry? You know, tools, equipment, hand tools, power tools. On a ladder truck, as Mike eloquently spoke about, ground ladders. If on any kind of engine, all right, look at it as you're assessing, you know, your district and looking at how it maybe has changed, you know, right under your, right beneath your feet, so to speak, is maybe the way that you've tactically operated your units needs to change a little bit. So that's item number one. Item number two, this is really prevalent in volunteer organizations, but could potentially impact other departments as well. It's really just administratively how you set up. I think the second point of failure is too large a committee, too large a group. You certainly want to be all encompassing and get differing opinions, but our experience has been if you have more than 4 to 5 folks on there, 6 even, it's starting to get a little unwieldy. Unless people are all proverbially on the same sheet of music when they start, you've just got too many opinions. And when you're designing a combination unit, particularly, we've seen this time and time again, particularly with Quince and rescue engines, if there's 7 or 8 people on a committee, everybody has one particular area, either of expertise based on what their vocation is or based on their experience within the organization, and it would be classed under the category of everybody wants everything. So if Brother Mike, and we're designing a Quint, and Brother Mike is insistent because of his experience that he's got to have 2 compartments dedicated to hand tools and fans and stuff like that, and that's impinging on the space because I'm an engine guy, and now the salesperson saying, well, I know your hydrant spacing on average is 750 to 800 feet, so Shand wants 1,000 feet of supply line, but because we've now got full depth compartments, I can only get 600 feet of supply line. Now, those both, you can't get both things on there. Something's got to give, and what happens is everybody wants everything. So while it is important to get the feedback from certainly people that need to be on the committee, and no disrespect to anybody that wears a white hat, be a chief, but the fire chief may or may not need to be on the committee based on the size of your organization. Certainly if you have company grade officers, the officer that's in charge of this potential unit, he certainly should be on a committee. Folks that have senior experience that have done it before, it's nice to have new ideas, but you don't want to have a committee made up of 5 people with someone that's never bought a fire truck before. Bad idea. Get somebody that's got that has experience. Get input from your mechanic, whether he's within the department or outside the department. If there are things that he sees, all different makes, models, brands of fire truck, that person is a walking encyclopedia of what works and what doesn't work in your particular area based on the demographics, the type of topography, the life cycle experience that you have, the number of runs that you're going to do. And we have seen time and time again where people have gone out and bought twins because they thought, why should we do this again? Because we just want to buy another one in a year or go buy multiple rigs, and you make a wrong purchasing decision on either one component. Could be something as simple as an alternator. You haven't properly sized the alternator and your electrical and your battery pack for the demand that's on the unit, and then the rig is constantly out of service because of electronic problems. And guess what? That's not necessarily the fault of the people that built it. That could have been your fault because you went off in the wrong direction to start with. So, Mike, I mean, we have worked with folks that it's been a 2 or 3-person committee, and probably just because the interaction in the group's a little bit different. You know, we're not saying that that's a hard and fast number, But if you get more than five people on there, Mike, my experience has been, and there's been times you and I have been in the fray, we might as well just put a referee shirt on and look like we're ref at a football game, because it's basically a free for all. Nobody wants to give, you know, a yard on any particular topic.
Well, and the other thing, Tom, is that you're each person on the committee, if they're not in like and kind mind, are going to want something totally different. And that's where you start getting the pumper tanker foam aerial rescue trucks. And there's a lot of those. I mean, I have a whole series of pictures. You know, one guy on the committee wanted an aerial, so he gets his way. One guy on the committee wanted a tanker, so they loaded up with water. One guy wanted a super engine. One guy wanted a rescue truck, so we put a light tower and a generator on this truck. And all of a sudden, we have a truck that's on a 278-inch wheelbase that weighs about 70,000 pounds and can do a lot of stuff, but doesn't necessarily do any of it any well. But everybody on the committee got their piece of the pie, and they can point to this behemoth and say, yep, I did that. But at the end of the day, you're stuck for 20 years, and whatever you did, you're going to end up keeping it. And that's something I think that all of our listeners could probably agree. You can go three departments in any direction from where you are today and find somebody that's bought a new fire truck in the last 3 or 4 years, and they absolutely hate it. And they are now stuck for the next 17 to 21 to potentially 30 years or 27 years with this truck that they already don't like. Part of the problem could have been that it was a truck committee issue where everybody got their way and it turned out to be a disaster. And then in some cases, it could be the salesman that may have not necessarily known what he or she was doing. Or in yet other cases, it may be a combination of both parties and both groups. But the reality is that whenever you put pen to paper, whenever you form a committee and you get more than five or six people, you are just looking for confrontation. It's a lot harder to get consensus, and you're probably nobody's going to be happy with the final product. I mean, you've been on any number of final inspections, and how many times have you gone and the apparatus committee gets that first glance of their truck and they don't even recognize it? And what's one of your always favorite sayings? You can put it on a piece of paper and it always fits, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, every fire truck I've ever worked on, every design, any blueprint I've ever looked at typically fit on an 11 by 17 piece of paper, and some people, they see the difference between 32 feet 11 inches and 36 feet 11 inches, and they can't really comprehend that. So, at any rate, that brings us to number three. We've talked about one of the biggest issues on fire trucks today is overweight apparatus. So, our number three of our top five mistakes when specifying a new rig, you have not yet determined what equipment you want to carry in terms of size, weight. And if it's on a special service vehicle, if it's anything bigger than a standard run-of-the-mill pumper or a small little attack vehicle, you certainly need to have room for expansion, particularly on any kind of heavy rescue. Or if you're running a ladder truck and at some point you're thinking, I'm going to downsize and I now need to start operating the ladder truck as a rescue unit or have tech rescue equipment, right after you determine the mission of the vehicle, which means ahead of time, if we look at this thing, you've already figured out how many people need to be on the committee, all right? You then determine the mission of the vehicle. The next thing, before you start worrying about whether you want a standard NFPA 72-inch wide light bar, an 88-inch wide light bar, or you're going to pull open any brand of catalog and build your own light bar to the tune of several thousand dollars, you need to look, take a hard and fast look, go down at the rig that you're replacing, if it's a replacement unit. You open up the compartment doors, and you take a detailed physical inventory of the unit. If you don't know how much that equipment weighs, weigh it. It might mean you're going to take the vehicle And while you're doing the axle weights, when you get the whole total vehicle weight, you're going to bring it back to the fire station, and then you're going to strip it of everything that's inside the compartments and everything that's inside the cab. Right? You can leave the hose on it because that hose is part of the payload that the manufacturer is responsible for calculating. But if you're going to change up on things, here's a good one, right? Mike and I recently did a community that had a number of rescue engines, and initially they were outfitted with 4-inch hose. Well, then they started carrying 5-inch hose, and then they started carrying a little bit of extra 5-inch hose. Well, inadvertently they found out we just increased the weight on the back end of this vehicle by 800 pounds. Now, normally you'd say, 800 pounds, what's the big deal? That could be the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back, and now you have an overweight unit. So you need to clearly define your equipment inventory, the size, and the weight. If you haven't done that, and the number of times that Mike and I have met with departments and they say, even do you have an inventory of your existing rig? And it's ranged everything from a detailed checklist, potentially with digital pictures of exactly what's where, how it's mounted, and what it looks like, to someone that doesn't even have an inventory of a unit, and they had to kind of go around the rig and figure it out. I don't know how you operate a fire department and not know what's on your rig, not require even a probationary member to have memorized what's where on the rig and what he's qualified to operate or go get versus things that he's going to stay away from. You don't give a rookie, for example, and send him to the roof with a partner saw by himself and say, go cut a hole in the roof and let's hope it works out, all right? But physical inventories of the apparatus are vitally important and need to be done. So, Mike, I know this is one that's near and dear to your heart, all right? Our number four of the top five mistakes, buying with your neighboring department or someone within the close area of your jurisdiction, buying what a neighboring department did, buying what the salesperson is happening or promoting, or not having a clear understanding of basic dimensions. My comment, Mike, how big is big? If you can't envision what 36 feet 11 inches looks, if that's what you're designing, you get a tape measure and you measure it out and you chalk it on the floor of your apparatus bays, most importantly. And Mike will talk about things that if you're buying a first-time rig, particularly an aerial device, this is something you ought to be doing as a natural course of action. Mike, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, how many times have we seen, or even our listeners, where a truck is purchased and they go to back it in the firehouse, and one of the basic things, it just doesn't fit. There was a picture online the other day of an ambulance out on Long Island that cleared the top of the ambulance off because it went under an underpass where it couldn't fit. Dimensions are absolutely huge. I have a number of pictures of trucks that have fallen through bridges. There's a picture on the internet of a Detroit pumper that sheared off the top of its cab going through an underpass where it couldn't fit. All big problems. One of the things that we always talk about as well is keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, the Joneses bought a 4,000-gallon triaxle tanker. And so what do we have to do? Well, we have to buy a 5,000 quad-axle tanker because we got to do one up. Or the Joneses next door got two guns in the basket of their aerial tower, so now we're going to order three. Do we have the water to feed any of it? Is the pipe big enough to support it on the apparatus? No, but we're just going to go out and do it because we need to keep up with our neighbor that we call the Joneses. That's no way to buy a fire truck. And a lot of times you may get snookered into buying something because that's what the salesman du jour happens to be promoting this year. It's their latest and greatest. And, of course, one of Mike and Tom's apparatus rules always will be most departments that are buying one truck at a time and have to keep it for 20 or 30 years can ill afford to become the research and development arm for any fire truck manufacturer. So you don't want to buy the first one that's built. You don't want to buy one of the first 10. In fact, you may not even want to buy one of the first 50. You want to buy something that the manufacturer has been manufacturing for a good deal of time. You want to buy it from a reputable person, and you want to buy a rig that's going to give you longevity and not eat you up with maintenance budget concerns and a lot of downtime. If you don't understand what you're buying, then maybe you need to get somebody involved in the mix that can help you. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you could end up being one of those departments like we just talked about that are within three departments of yours. You could actually be that department that has purchased something recently and are very unhappy with it and are now going to be stuck with it for a long time, because unlike a car where if you get tired of it after a couple of years, you just sell it and buy something else, that's not generally what we do with fire trucks. We generally have to keep them for a very long time. So if you screw it up today, the price for that screw-up is going to be long-term and almost never-ending, and it'll haunt you forever.
Mike, just to amplify that, one of the most interesting comments that we frequently get from folks, particularly with engine-style apparatus, whatever size you people happen to run in your department, that when they go to buy a new replacement vehicle, and I wouldn't say replacement. Here's the scenario. You bought a rig in the early 90s. You bought a rig between, say, 2004, 2008. It's now 2014. You're replacing that older unit that it's visually apparent that the unit that they're specifying or that they're taking delivery of or at a show is dramatically different, meaning it's smaller, more compact, doesn't have as much tools and equipment on it, particularly from a rescue perspective. And you'll ask people, why do you do that? I said, well, after buying the last one, we realized that was the multi-mission vehicle. It was nice to have, but we found out it doesn't get around all that well in volunteer organizations. This sounds unbelievable, but it's true. We have found people that design the rig of their dreams, and then they have less than half of the authorized drivers on that unit because basically you made it so big that people don't like the way it handles. Or, quote, we've actually had folks, we got drivers that are scared of it and they won't touch it. So they're driving the oldest unit. They don't even want to attempt driving the newer pumper. And it's more of a back-to-basics approach where we need something in the world of engine company apparatus. I just had this told to me last Thursday in two places I stopped on the way back home from working up in southern New York. That fellow said, we wanted a back-to-basics small pumper that was a pumper and nothing else. And when I inquired, I said, how difficult was it for you to make that assessment? In both cases, the people who brought the rigs out for me to take a look at them and take some pictures of them said, we would generally have at least one or two people that just, you know, were adamant that we needed to throw everything in the kitchen sink at this rig and find out that, yeah, we may be a multi-purpose organization, but we don't need to be carrying, you know, for example, this might sound like heresy, and it may not apply depending upon the size of your organization and operationally how you deploy your apparatus, but every pumper doesn't need to be extrication, hydraulic rescue tool extrication capable. That may very well be what you need to do, but occasionally, even in a smaller department, you may be tasked to go put out a fire. So if you don't carry, if you don't have enough staffing, if you don't have enough well-trained people to operate the unit, if you can't lay a supply line and stretch it, if you need to climb up six folding steps to get to an attack line or to reach your supply line, when you then, even in a rural situation, you're going to drop the line at the entrance of the driveway off the roadway, so a tanker can come in or a nurse unit can come in and charge your line. If you're setting up your stuff like that, chances are you're setting it up either A, to fail, or B, somebody's going to get hurt. So how big is big? Really pay attention to that. And wrapping up, our top five things, because most of us focus on what's going on today, what's going on in the next couple of weeks. Failure to look at the future. When you go to buy a new fire truck, what's your fleet replacement plan? Is this rig going to be in your system for 7 years? Is it going to be there for 10 years? We've had people say, oh, we have a fleet replacement policy. We replace fire trucks at 20 years. And then you look at how frequently they bought a fire truck and say, well, I know that's what you told me, but the, you know, if you look at your past purchasing practices, you've replaced a fire truck every 24 and a half years. So while you may think that you replace them at 20, you don't. So if you've got a unit that's got an extended life cycle, what is your community, what is your response area going to look like 10, 15 years from now? If you think it's an expanding community and they're building, to go to Mike's point, they're building streets that meet all the local codes, and you could take a 37-foot fire truck down a road sideways and still have 6 feet on either side, that's one thing. In many communities, particularly with the way the economy is, developers are doing, frankly, whatever they can to stay in business, just like everybody else, all right, and trying to maybe, in some cases, just build the street to hold the personal vehicles and maybe have no intention in turning it over to the community for municipal service, for snowplow service, and for road maintenance and everything. So that means it was designed to hold a car or a pickup truck, probably wasn't even designed to hold the contractor's equipment as the supply truck came in to offload all the framing and the wood to build the house, and now we're coming down a road with a 50,000 or heavier GVW fire truck and wondering why the road is giving way underneath us. You need to have those things and be thinking about all of that. Mike, I'll throw it to you. You got to be thinking about, in your world, like a ladder truck. You might have a community where there's limited building regulations, and right now the highest thing in your first due is a 2.5-story frame that's maybe 3.5 stories off the back because of geography, but what's it going to look like in 10, 15 years?
Good point, Brother Tom. Good. All good points. To wrap up this morning's discussion on looking towards the future. Nobody has a crystal ball, but when you see some of the stuff being built, and then you look at some of the apparatus committees, I know that you and I both have sons in their 20s and daughters, and their idea of the future is tonight, what's for dinner. It just seems to be a generational thing as well, that and how many fire departments have we actually visited or have interacted with that don't have a fleet replacement plan? And ladies and gentlemen, that is just so important. That is the largest single capital expenditure, with the exception of building a new station, that the fire department's going to make. And if you're in a city setting or a village setting, a fire truck is going to be more expensive than the dump truck, the sewage truck, the backhoe, whatever piece of equipment that your town is going to buy. That fire truck is going to cost more than any of it. And without proper planning and room for future growth and looking ahead to the future, we're almost setting ourselves up for failure. The days of going into the mayor and telling him, you know, we need a new ladder truck next year, this one's worn out, without any prior notice, isn't going to cut it anymore. With aerial apparatus at around $1 million, a good deal of planning by the authority having jurisdiction to account for that funding has to be done. Interesting about having a good fleet evaluation plan for the future is that the document is a working, living, breathing document that actually outlives the people that are in charge today. Regardless of who the fire chief is or who the mayor or who the chairman of the Board of Fire Commissioners is irrelevant. The reality is if you take and get a good fleet replacement plan and adopt it, everybody is well aware that in 2017, we need to replace engine one, and that in 2022, we need to replace truck one, and in 2025, we need to replace tanker one or tender one. And so by working this out ahead of time, the authority having jurisdiction will be able to be fiscally responsible and will be able to have those funds dedicated to you so that you'll be able to go out and purchase that vehicle and maintain your fleet in good standing.
Mike, makes great sense. So wrap it up. There's, and I'm sure we could probably think of many, many more, but those are the top five things that Mike and I think that if you're setting out to establish an apparatus committee or to work on either a replacement unit or new unit, some things that your brother and sister firefighters need to be thinking about. So once again, we appreciate everybody's interest in listening to our podcast. Mike and Tom will be there live and in person, God willing. The Firehouse Expo in Baltimore on July 17, 18, and 19 will each be putting on together a couple of programs, Mike doing a few as well, and we'll be hopefully taping a live podcast during the event. So we look forward to seeing you folks there in probably less than just a couple of weeks, and we look forward to seeing everybody there. So for Mike Wilbur and Tom Shan, the Apparatus Architects, until we talk to you on the radio again, take care and be safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.